Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Today's date is September 16th, 2014. This is the Alex Jones Show. We're going to be here live from 11 a.m., just right now, to 2 p.m. Central. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Rob Dew. It's a pleasure to be with you today. We have a lot of big news coming up. We're going to recap some Ebola news that if you were listening to the Sunday show, I went over with Paul Joseph Watson, plus some new news. We are now deploying troops to the area. Of course, it's just for everybody's safety. That's why you deploy troops to areas like this, usually to take them over and grab people's resources. But here we're going to be building hospitals. We're going on humanitarian missions. That's the Mail Online, U.S. to send 3,000 troops to Ebola danger zone. We're going to get into that coming up. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to premiere a video which is going viral on the Alex Jones channel right now. And it's when we sent our crew, I have that up right there, guys. Y'all can pull that up. For our 9/11 Terror Watch in New York City, we sent two of our reporters and a cameraman there. 9/11 firefighter blows WTC cover-up wide open. This is an amazing interview with firefighter Rudy Dent. And he was there. He actually saw World Trade Center 7. He saw the explosions before it collapsed. And he got there after the towers collapsed. So he wasn't really in the fog of war, but not so much as, covered in World Trade Center dust. He got there after it had happened. Happened to be his day off. He's got an amazing story. And then in studio, we're going to have Leanne McAdoo and Joe Biggs talking about what they saw in New York City, all the different things. They were covering a lot of different subjects, but mainly, talking to the 9/11 folks that were there, people still bringing it to the table, trying to wake people up. And I think one of the amazing things during this interview, you see a lot of people in the background, and it really is the perfect picture of our society. Ha ha, a lot of people just hanging out, taking photographs, high-fiving. And here's a guy talking about witnessing one of the worst false flag terror attacks that we've ever had in our country. It basically brought us into two wars. We've had our own lost decade of time where, it seemed up till 9/11, we were making progress of waking people up to the left-right paradigm. And after that, boy, it's caught, go to more wars, raise more taxes, have more government, fear the citizens. That's what we've come to. That's the place we're at now. And we have senators saying that if we put any kind of restraints on the NSA, that's going to help ISIS. And we have reports that ISIS may be down at the border, but the government's saying, no, that's not happening, even though we've had groups like Judicial Watch sue and get the documents saying they're concerned about ISIS at the border. There's an article, Feds Find 9/11 Terror Message on Border Fence. And in the second hour, we're going to have Lord Christopher Monckton coming on talking about the independence movement that's going on in Scotland, what it means for the UK, what it means for all of us. He's also going to be talking about the latest news in climate change. There's an article on Drudge where Obama's going after a new coolant because that is now the scourge. It is really interesting how these control freaks, they always try to find one thing and go, this is the problem. This is the problem with everything. And if we stop this, we'll be okay. But then they want to grab something else and something else. And then they control everything. It's all about putting, they say, the camel's nose under the tent. That's what we're dealing with right now. So we got a big show, and we're also going to take your calls in the third hour. I'm excited. It is the Infowars.com. This is the Alex Jones Show. You can find more and watch us live on PrisonPlanet.tv. We'll be right back.
Baby, baby, I'm going to leave you.
I feel like this all the time, trying to politically awaken people that they're being lied to, that there's an agenda It's not left or right. It's, hey, there's mind control going on. The signal's broadcast 24 hours a day through all this media. Just become aware of it, and they'll say, there's nothing going on. And I want to say, put on these glasses or start chewing concrete.
They have taken the hearts and minds of our leaders. They have recruited the rich and the powerful. And they have blinded us to the truth.
The question is, do we all work for central bankers? That's what I want to address to our guest tonight.
Our impulses are being redirected. We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep.
An estimated 50 to 70 million Americans suffer from a sleep disorder or sleep deprivation.
Outside the limit of our sight, feeding off us, perched on top of us from birth to death, are our owners.
Latest census numbers prove the United States has the biggest gap between rich and poor compared to all westernized countries today.
Our projections show that by the year 2025, not only America, but the entire planet will be under the protection and the dominion of this power alliance. The gains have been substantial, both for ourselves and for you, the human power elite.
And for the first time in all of human history, mankind is politically awakened. That's a total new reality.
I've got one that can see.
We can't be the only ones who can see.
Unfortunately, you've grown up hearing voices that incessantly warn of government as nothing more than some separate, sinister entity that's got at the root of all our problems.
It's a new morning in America. Fresh, vital. The old cynicism is gone. We have faith in our leaders. We're optimistic as to what becomes of it all. It really boils down to our ability to accept. We don't need pessimism.
I have two words for you. Predator drones.
And who are you, little fella?
You will never see it coming.
And I'm predicting the first guy who uses a Second Amendment weapon to bring a drone down that's been hovering over his house is going to be a folk hero in this country.
Nice.
There is a signal broadcast every second of every day through our television sets.
I'm just trying to warn you folks, the television is a giant LED weapon system. It's so advanced. They got a monkey farm in Bastrop, folks, that they do all sorts of testing on great apes, rhesus monkeys, the whole nine yards. And they go, oh, you didn't see this, and punch a button and it'd be hundreds of monkeys with wires in their brains with television sets brainwashing them.
All I ever have to do is be famous. People watch me. And they love me.
You can have a little taste of that good life, too. Now, I know you want it. Hell, everybody does.
Do it to your own kind.
What's the threat? We all sell out every day. Might as well be on the winning team.
The real men of the world have to stand up and say,
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
And I'm all out of bubblegum. Time to take a stand, boys. You know what? You got a little courage. Stand up for yourself.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones coming to you live from the front lines of the InfoWar.
The Oscar winners give a press conference and how to buy a sailboat as...
And if you're watching video of that on prisonplanet.tv or infowars.com/show for our free video stream, you would have seen all the graphics and video editing that went into that intro, which is kind of a takeoff of, we took some great clips of They Live, part of an interview that we did with Roddy Piper and Sean Stone. And that's the kind of things we do here to wake people up, take the pop culture and interviews real stuff that goes along with it to try to wake people up and see that life is imitating art. Art is imitating life. It's one way we do it here at InfoWars.com. This is the Alex Jones Show. Welcome. We're going to be here live till 2 p.m. Central, and we've got a great show lined up. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Rudy Dent an interview that we did in Times Square. He was a firefighter who saw World Trade Center 7 explode and collapse. He saw lots of explosions that he can't explain. And he's asked questions and he's speaking out. And he's not afraid that his pension's going to get taken away. He's doing it because it's the right thing to do. There's a story that we're also going to have Joe Biggs and Leanne McAdoo in here right after we air that interview, premiere it here live. And they're going to talk about some things that they didn't put out in video. They had police officers coming up to them, telling them stuff. Amazing stuff. And really what it takes is people speaking out. Because if you stand there on the sidelines and wait for someone else to do it, you're going to be waiting an awful long time. The fact that you're recognizing that things are going wrong in this country and in the world means that you really have to start standing up and getting in the ball game. And if people criticize you, that's fine. At least you're doing something. At least you're not just sitting on the sidelines being a spectator or an armchair quarterback. Get out and do something. We have a video that we're going to go to later. A guy went around asking people to support ISIS. He was getting a petition. And people signed it. He had at least 11 signatures. And he said some people wanted to beat him up. Those are the awake people. Those are the people that need to get in and do something. But the people that were asleep, there was at least 11 people he talked to that signed a petition to support ISIS. And there's a video right now. It's at George Mason University in Virginia. And that's what it takes. It takes people doing stuff like this. We have to use their culture paradigms that they've given us, the YouTubes, the Facebooks, and inject messages of freedom and liberty and honesty and hard work and perseverance. We need to inject those messages and health information that they're trying to hide from you. There's a lot of health information out there that you probably don't know about, especially if you just stay in the medical model and go to your doctor and you're taking your prescription drugs. There's ways to do it. I haven't had a prescription drug 8 years, maybe. Maybe one in between there for I had a really bad case of poison ivy, and I had a steroid to take care of the itch. That's about it. I haven't had anything in a long time because I've decided to take and break away from the medical model, which also means you have to empower yourself. And by empowering yourself, that means you have to take responsibility. So I want to get into this Ebola news now. Mail Online has an article. U.S. to send 3,000 troops to Ebola danger zone as Obama administration shuffles military's mission in Africa. Yeah, there's no shuffling. That's been the plan, which we talked to you about in Obama deception. Webster Tarpley broke it down, how AFRICOM is going to go in, and that's the next place. And that's why we need a black president to go into Africa. But what's really interesting is you go through this article, and they talked to a Pentagon official, Mail Online did. He says, combat soldiers and Marines will be on hand and ready for anything, said the official, who has knowledge of some but not all of the Ebola-related planning. But hopefully it will be all logistics and hospital building. The president has ordered us to help, and we're eager to do it, he said. Now, it looks like we're going to be the lead dog, and that's bound to make a lot of people nervous. I wonder why. And it's understandable. But no one wants U.S. personnel enforcing someone else's martial law if things go south and the entire region is at risk. At that point in the response like this, we would normally play a support role for USAID, and that's Soros-run, and the CDC, he said, referring to U.S. Agency of International Development and the Centers for Disease Control. So we're sending troops there, possibly for a martial law scenario, which they have been training for under the guise of this zombie apocalypse. There's a Christian Science Monitor article from 2012. U.S. military forces train for zombie apocalypse. And Brad Barker, president of Halo Corp, says this is a really good exercise, not just some kind of costume party. I think it's amazing that he's president of Halo Corp. Why not just be the president of the Umbrella Corporation and get it over with? Those of you who watched Resident Evil will understand that. And over the weekend, there was an interesting article from the New York Times, an opinion piece called The Great Unraveling, just talking about how the systems are breaking down. And this is all done by design to get us into other wars, open up the borders. So you have different types of people coming in who aren't supposed to be coming into your country. And you've got these pandemics breaking out with Ebola, all kinds of stuff, really amazing stuff. And we're going to play some special reports as well. I want to go to one here coming up. Let's see. Do we still have time to play that one, guys? Not enough. Okay, we're going to play that in the next segment. And that's about the 28 pages that are being kept classified of the 9/11 Commission Report, which is a whitewash in itself. But there's 28 pages that they thought were too damning to release to the public. We've got senators, we've got congressmen, we've got former 9/11 commissioners calling for this to be brought out into the open, for light to be shed on it, so we can all see what's going on. Because we know the official story doesn't have a leg to stand on, especially when you start looking at it from an objective point of view, not from an hysterical mind control, mind slave point of view of problem, reaction, solution. When you take that out of the equation and you look at the fundamentals of who was in charge, who stood down, and all the other millions of smoking guns that come with 9/11, then you see that it is a fraud and the official story does not stand. So we're going to get to that coming up in the break. And I don't even think I'm going to come back. We're just going to go right into that piece about the 28 pages. And then when we come back at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have the Rudy Dent interview, which is an amazing interview. I couldn't believe that this guy, you know, 14 years later, he's still passionate about the topic. He mentions the three friends he lost. I mean, this guy is really opening up, and you need to get this interview. It should have more than 225,000 views. I mean, Spider Dog gets 70-something million views, and it's literally a nothing video. I mean, it's funny, but there's no cultural significance to that video other than it's funny. We're gonna be back with all that. Plus, we have Lord Mockton in the second hour, and in the third hour, we're gonna have the William Binney Alex Jones interview, an amazing interview. You want to talk about a whistleblower, an NSA whistleblower? He's one of the originals, way before Edward Snowden decided to come out. There was William Binney. So we've got all that and more. It's the Alex Jones Show. We're here live. It's September 16th, 2014. I'm your host, Rob Dude. We'll be right back.
After the 9/11 attacks, the American public was told that Al-Qaeda acted alone. They told us that 9/11 was not state-sponsored terrorism, meaning no other country or government helped plan, finance, practice, and execute the complicated and well-orchestrated attack on our country. We were led to believe it was perpetrated solely by Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda network of radical Muslim extremists. The United States and its allies retaliated first by targeting Afghanistan and then by launching the invasion of Iraq in 2003.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
But 13 years after September 11th, 2001, there are still questions about who planned and financed 9/11. And 28 censored pages of the official 9/11 report remain classified to this day as a matter of national security. But many surviving family members of the victims and a growing number of the American public aren't buying the Bush administration's original claim that the documents must be kept secret to help investigators hunt down terrorists. In fact, there has recently been a handful of lawmakers who have finally been able to get access to the protected 28 pages, and they are absolutely shocked at the level of foreign state involvement in the attacks.
This sort of shocking when you read it, as I read it, and we all had our own experience, I had to stop every couple pages and just sort of absorb and try to rearrange my understanding of history for the past 13 years and the years leading up to that. It challenges you to rethink everything. And so I think the whole country needs to go through that.
I want those documents declassified. I'm embarrassed to be associated with a work product that is secret.
Now, federal law forbids these guys to publicly identify which foreign entity was responsible in assisting the terrorist. But judging by the long history of the Bush family's close and personal relationship with the Saudi royal family, all evidence points to Saudi Arabia. And now a bipartisan bill has been sponsored by Congressman Walter Jones and Stephen Lynch, asking President Obama to release the classified records. Yeah, well, don't hold your breath. The new boss is the same as the old boss. Former Senator Bob Graham, who co-chaired the Joint Senate-House investigation into the September 11th attacks, he says, "I am convinced that there was a direct line between at least some of the terrorists who carried out the September 11th attacks and the government of Saudi Arabia. He called it a smoking gun and went on to say the reason for this cover-up goes right up to the White House. Meanwhile, the New York Post says the Saudis deny any role in 9/11, but the CIA in one memo reportedly found incontrovertible evidence that Saudi government officials, not just wealthy Saudi hardliners, but high-level diplomats and intelligence officers employed by the kingdom helped the hijackers both financially and logistically.
What do we know is in the 28 censored pages of the 9/11 report? People that have seen it said it would bring down the whole system.
I've met with and talked to multiple members of Congress who read it. They are convinced the American people needs to see it. It has to do with information which is not convenient to the White House, either White House, the Clinton White House or the Bush White House, and it has to do with an ally who essentially looked the other way and allowed a lot of support for these the terrorists who conducted the attack.
But just to be clear, this is what I've been told, that there was a cover-up, that Saudi Arabia was involved, and basically that's why there was a stand-down, because they didn't want to embarrass the Saudis, and that's why six of the 10 commissioners want it released. Is that right?
I can't confirm everything you just said, but I can confirm the Saudi is the name of the country which is being implicated, yes.
And do you think it's going to be released?
I'm working with a number of members of Congress and doing everything I can to help behind the scenes. I hope that they do. I know there's a coalition right now trying to get it released, Alex. I hope they get it released.
That's right. You're working with Walter Jones of North Carolina and Stephen Lynch of Massachusetts.
That's correct, yes.
Well, you guys don't need to fly on any small planes, I'll tell you that.
That's true.
Wow. So the question is, if members of the Saudi government did in fact help train and finance the hijackers, wouldn't that make 9/11 more than just an act of terrorism? I mean, that would make it an act of war. And I think we can all agree that the classified documents no longer, if ever, pose a risk to national security. I guess you could say they do pose a risk to George W. So what are you afraid of, Bush? Why don't you and Obama get together and release the documents? After all, you're either with us or you're with the terrorist.
There you go. Get that report out. It's Leaders Demand Release of Censored 28 Pages of 9/11 Report. Leaders Demand Release of Censored 28 Pages of 9/11 Report. Get that out to everyone you know. We're going to be back with Rudy Dent.
We're on the march. The Empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network. Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
And we are live. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Be with you here till 2 p.m. Central. We got quite a show lined up for you. We're about to go to a interview that was done at Times Square with a firefighter who saw Building 7 collapse into its own footprint and saw the explosions happen beforehand. It's an amazing story. Exclusive to Infowars.com. It's called 9/11 Firefighter Blows WTC Cover-Up Wide Open. It's got over 200,000 views. It needs to have 2 million views, minimum. It needs to have 2 million views by the end of this week. So get this video out, spread it around everybody you know. Before we go to that, I want to do a quick plug here for InfowarsLife.com. You can see the products over here behind me. I'm on four of these. I do Super Male Vitality, Survival Shield X2. I take Silver Bullet when I need it. And I just started the Oxy Powder to do a cleansing of my insides. And let me tell you, the stuff works. It is amazing. I feel like I've lost, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 pounds of just crud that was in my insides. I mean, it literally, it cleans you out. So if you're thinking about it, if you're on the fence, I would get a couple of these bottles. And it has the directions on the side of what to do. Consult your doctor. I'm not a doctor. We also have the DNA Force, which will be back in soon. Super Female Vitality, the Lung Cleanse, Fluoride Shield. All that you can find at InfowarsLife.com. And it supports everything we do here. It helps send our reporters out to different locations, to Ferguson, to the World Trade Center, 14th anniversary of 9/11. We sent Joe Biggs and Josh Owens to the border to look at what was going on with ISIS. That all helps. Also helps become a member of PrisonPlanet.tv. You can download all of the live show, the nightly news, everything that we do here, we put up on PrisonPlanet.tv. You can download it in high quality. You could put it up on your own YouTube channel with your own analysis and your own comments. You could pass out the videos for free, burn DVDs. I know people who burn tons of DVDs. They'll put like 10 movies on one DVD and just pass them out for free. Amazing way to wake people up. And they may not look at it right then, but maybe 5 years from now, or maybe their little brother will pick it up and say, what's this? And become, you know, the next Alex Jones. You never know. You always have to be planting seeds out there because you don't know which ones are going to bear fruit. Let's go now to this interview with Rudy Dent, 9/11 firefighter, blows WTC cover-up wide open.
I'm Leanne McAdoo with InfoWars.com, reporting here from Times Square. I am standing next to Rudy Dent. He's a 32-year veteran of the New York City Fire Department. He's worked as well with the New York City Police Department. And you retired right after 9/11. He was there on 9/11. He saw World Trade Center Tower 7 come down. Rudy, tell us about what happened that day.
Well, I was off that day, and I received a call at home, and I got to see both buildings come down on TV. I jumped on my motorcycle. I did about 120 miles an hour across the Tappan Zee. I reported to my firehouse, and then I got my gear. A bunch of us got together. We commandeered a mail truck, and we made our way down to the site. At that time, Building 7 was still up. I saw Building 7 come down. My fellow firefighters who were there, they did that involuntary jerk when a loud explosion goes off. You know, you can't help it. And they did. I'm a Vietnam veteran, too, so I kind of didn't jump like they did. But there was an explosion. The building did come down in complete classical controlled demolition. It came down on its own footprint. There's no question about that. As a matter of fact, Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers has completely handled that from his area of expertise. Okay.
Now, we heard rumblings, things that the fire department was saying, that they were overhearing Larry Silverstein talking to his insurance company of whether or not he should have the building pulled. In your professional opinion, was the building pulled?
Well, let me say this. In the New York City Fire Department, As I said, I had 32 years there. I was a chauffeur, and I was also a trained fire marshal. A fire marshal is considered an expert witness in court. He's like a forensic detective. He has the power to administer the oath, take testimony, and issue a subpoena. That's a lot of power. And he's a highly trained investigative person in his area of expertise in arson. And we have no term that I know of that says pulling buildings. That's not our area of expertise. We've never done that. We don't do that. So for him to say that, I don't know where he pulled that out of, but it's just not part of our operations, okay?
Right. So the fire department doesn't have the training to pull a building, to demo a building like that.
We're not trained to do that. We've never done that in my 32 years. I know of no evolution whatsoever that does that.
And then talk to me a little bit, obviously, as a professional in the fire department for 30 plus years, they're saying that blaming it on office fires, just a few office fires.
Well, if it wasn't so serious a situation, that would be completely laughable. That is ridiculous. First of all, our guys were up there. They were calling for additional hand lines to mop up the isolated pockets of fire. And let me just explain one thing. Never in the history of a world, never in the history of high-rise skyscrapers has ever a skyscraper ever come down because of fire. And I'm talking massive fire. And you know the reason why? Because fire does not burn by itself hot enough to compromise and melt steel. What we had in the World Trade Center, and I saw myself, was molten lava-like pockets of molten steel. All right? I spent the night on the pile searching for bodies, and I saw that with my own eyes. So who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe a bunch of government bureaucrats or my fellow brothers, which I lost 343 guys that day. And I lost Tommy O'Hagan, Bruce Van Hines, and Kenny Kumpel. And I can never forget that. I think of that before I go to bed. I think about it the first thing in the morning when I wake up. And it's in honor of them and their family that I will continue to do everything I can to make the rest of the world wake up to the fact that this was a false flag operation.
Right. And now, as you're out there with professionals who understand what it is that they're seeing, what were you all saying to each other when you're looking at this molten lava?
Well, we were overcome with grief. First of all, we lost 343 guys. We weren't talking about that. If you look at the numerous videos, you'll see the guys bent over in incredible grief. One of the things that we have in the fire department is an incredible brotherhood. We do what we do, an aggressive interior attack, because we believe in each other. We know that our guys will pull us out if we get into trouble. And if we lose somebody, we're family. We're very close. We know each other's families. We know each other's children. And one of the things that I've been privy to is I'm proud of is that the New York City Fire Department is a calling. It brings out the best in guys. In men who put their lives on the line to save other people's lives. New York City Fire Department is probably the least integrated of all the services, right? When I first came into the firehouse, it was all heavy brogues and stuff. But those same guys, I've seen them bent over giving mouth-to-mouth to little black children that they've just pulled out of a building. And typically when you die or when you cease to breathe, you throw up. And they gave them mouth-to-mouth. You know, I've seen incredible acts of heroism. I love my fellow firefighters. We love each other. And I'm dedicated to exposing this false flag that took their lives.
What do your comrades say to you? What do people say to you? Because we've tried to talk to some people, and of course, they have to worry about their pension and things like that.
They cannot comment. And I'm retired. But while I was on, I was approached by the news, and I deferred from commenting for two reasons. First of all, I was at 1993, the first bombing. And I saw that I stood shoulder to shoulder with the FBI while they forage for little paint chips. And with their forensic science, they can take that paint chip and tell you the make and model of a vehicle that it belonged to. All right? And that was a bombing. This was a bombing.
What did you think about them taking all of the debris away so quickly?
That was a crime in and of itself, because the classical thing that any investigator is taught is protect the crime scene. And NIST and the 9/11 Commission lied to the public. I mean, you cannot be that stupid. You cannot be that stupid. In law, as a former police officer, every crime or offense has a degree of mental culpability. Either you knowingly, intentionally, recklessly, or negligently committed the act. And the mere fact that there were obviously the definition of a conspiracy is when two or more people acting in concert knowingly commit an offense or a crime. All right? A misdemeanor or felony. An offense. That is the definition of a conspiracy. Was this a conspiracy? Absolutely. Yes, it was. And those people need to go to jail for treason.
Is there anything else that you want to say to anyone out there? Anyone who might be wanting to come forward, but they're scared?
I want to thank you, because you're all we have. InfoWars, right? An independent press to try to get the word out to the public, because the public is mesmerized by the mainstream media. And let me give you my opinion of the mainstream media. The mainstream media is their mission is to act as the most effective weapon of mass deception and public manipulation the world has ever seen. And if you don't think that's so, ask anyone any taboo question that the mainstream media frowns upon with its army of trusted celebrity prostitutes.
Right.
All right?
We've seen it, and
you will see a sadly predictable knee-jerk reactionary response from the public because that's what they've been trained to believe and trust in.
Right.
All right?
Absolutely. Well, we are very glad that you took the time to speak with us to try and help break through that paradigm. We see, you know, here it is, it's very much like they live all around us with all this programming and just consistent programming with the ceremony. And we're just so thankful that people like you aren't afraid to speak out, aren't afraid to be laughed at, aren't afraid to be, you know, your friends say, what are you doing, man? Come on, maybe disrespectful.
You know, I think times are telling because, as you know, my name is Rudy Dent. I did an interview with Ludowski, and that interview got over 51,000 views and still climbing. It got over 1,500 likes, and it only got 32 insults.
Right.
All right.
The
so
people,
that's not bad.
They're ready for the truth, and they can think, you know, 13 years, people are going to forget. We will never forget. We remember.
Remember this. The founding fathers were up against impossible odds. They were up against King George III, upon whose holdings the sun never set. They were only 4%, and look what happened.
Absolutely. America.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Okay. My pleasure.
Well, Liam McAdoo reporting from Times Square, and there you have it. The people are ready for truth. It does not matter how many of these anniversaries go by. The truth will reveal itself in due time.
So are you ready for the truth out there? Are you ready to actually look at the way things happen, listen to what eyewitnesses have said, watch the video evidence, watch the news presentation from BBC where they're talking about the Building 7 falling, while they're standing in front of Building 7, and it hasn't fallen yet? This is a crime. Can you imagine what the world would be like if we didn't have 9/11? If we weren't in these wars? It'd be a totally different place. Totally different. We wouldn't have the NSA, the TSA. We still have the NSA, but they wouldn't be as big. You wouldn't have Homeland Security. I mean, we wouldn't even be talking about Janet Napolitano and Jay Johnson and all these other people that want to leave the border open. It would be a different world. So joining us now, we have the nice young lady, Leanne McAdoo, Joe Biggs. They were there in New York covering the 14th anniversary. Guys, what are your impressions of what was going on in 9/11? People are awake now and they're ready to accept the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
One of the craziest things I thought, you know, New York coined that phrase, never forget. There was a lot of people out there who forgot that 9/11 was going on.
Well, you saw them in that interview. They were walking back and forth looking for Batman
to take pictures with heroes because a hero to them is Superman, Spider-Man, something like that. Not a man like that who's willing to stand up against the grain and tell you the truth about what's really going on. That guy should have had a million pictures taken of him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. People should have been lined up saying, hey, you're a hero. You're speaking out. You're not concerned about your pension. And you have a story about that. You said a police officer came up to you. Tell us that story.
Right when we first got to right outside the Ground Zero area where they had a lot of the truthers blocked off to be able to, you know, talk and protest, I actually had a uniformed officer come up to me and he goes, hey, Joe Biggs, can I talk to you? And I'm sitting there first thinking like, all right, why does this cop know my name? And he's like, I can't be on record right now. He's like, I'm 2 months away from retirement, but I'm going to tell you this. He's like, I was there. I saw an explosion at the bottom of the second tower before it happened. I saw debris shoot out right before everything happened. And he says, I guarantee you that planes did not just bring this down. He's like, this was a planned event.
And how many more out there are like him, but they're afraid to come forward because they're worried about their pension? Let me tell you, they take your pension anytime they want.
Right.
They're doing it in Detroit. They're taking, everybody's got to take a haircut. That's what they call it. They call it a haircut when they steal money from you.
Right.
So they're going to take your pension whether you speak up or not.
Well, anybody in the government, all these government agencies now, Border Patrol is scared to come out and talk about the truce that they see, actually seeing Koreans and stuff at the border. They're afraid to speak to media because they're going to be threatened by the government, losing their jobs. They'll threaten them with, hey, your family's not going to have any money. Your kids aren't going to have the health care that we provide, all this stuff. It's crazy. The links are going to suppress these people from speaking out about what really happens all the time with this corrupt government.
Because they're afraid of the truth.
And
go ahead,
initially, if Rudy or others would have
spoken out, people wouldn't, they weren't ready to hear what they had to say. They would have immediately been ostracized. Now some time has passed and he is able to speak out. People are ready to hear the truth. They've had years and years and years of evidence presented to them. And that's one of the big issues that I have with people who just refuse to look at the evidence that they think they're so sophisticated, and everyone who's a quote unquote truther, as if wanting the truth is a bad thing, should be, you know, a bad thing. But
well, they're under psychological trauma. They've been beaten with this, the images of the buildings collapsing and the planes hitting the towers over and over again for 14 years now. We're into two wars. We're about to go into Africa to help them out with Ebola.
Right.
Sending troops to Africa to help with Ebola.
And what did I say last week while we were in New York?
Hold that. We're going to come right back with you guys. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. You can check us out at Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.tv, and Infowars.com/show. We'll be right back. Back live, crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Sitting over here shotgun, I got Leanne McAdoo, reporter for Infowars.com. Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, retired. Also reporter for Infowars.com. You can see them on the Infowars Nightly News on their many reports. And we're finishing up here with talking about New York, and we started talking about Africa as we were going to break. You like to talk about the slow progression of tyranny and what's going on in Africa now. First, we...
Well, like I said last week when we were at Ground Zero, when I was on the Alex Jones Show, I mentioned that how the government does stuff, we use this humanitarian crisis. Today, the headline on Drudge is humanitarian catastrophe in Africa. So what happens after there's a humanitarian crisis? We send troops. Now Obama is sending 3,000 troops. What has Obama said that he will do? To any American, he will detain them if they get Ebola. So what's going to happen? We send 3,000 Americans to Africa to help build these facilities, to house these Ebola patients. Someone gets sick, it spreads, they're detained, they're kept there. Then we have to build a bigger presence. We have to send more people. Next thing you know, we're sending thousands more troops to Africa. And then Leanne brought up a good point about the Bilderberg agenda. What was that?
Right. Well, this on this year's Bilderberg agenda, Africa's challenges. That was one of the big things that they were going to be discussing at Bilderberg, was Africa's challenges as well as, you know, the future of the Middle East. And so now we're seeing humanitarian crises that we've got to go and infiltrate these countries to help with these humanitarian crises in those particular areas.
Well, September 10th last year, a year ago from now, Obama, what did he do? The eve of 9/11, he came out and said, hey, we need to fund the Free Syrian Army to help topple the Assad regime because there's a humanitarian crisis going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to get that war. We need our next big war so we can move in those contracting groups and make billions of dollars for our country. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. Money and power and more land.
And now the ISIS moderates, all the rebel groups, their whole leadership has been decimated. We're going to start making bombing runs into Syria. And if Assad dares look at our planes, we're going to start a war with him.
Well, powerful al-Qaeda branches in Yemen and North Africa called Tuesday for jihadists in Iraq and Syria to unite against a common threat from a U.S.-led coalition.
Mm-hmm.
They are calling for everyone to come out there now, and now we're going to Africa.
Yeah, we've definitely created this mess, and it all started with Saudi Arabia funding ISIS. We're giving them weapons through Turkey. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it just keeps going and going. I mean, they're even running some of the bases out of Turkey.
And they're wanting to continue to arm the moderates that have been, they've been vetted and they're with us. They're not with the terrorists. Meanwhile, they just signed a non-aggression pact with ISIS.
Well, and they're giving the weapons that we give them, they just give to ISIS.
We're laundering weapons through these countries.
Exactly.
We give it to one person. We know that group gives it to them, to the Free Syrian Army. We know that the Free Syrian Army has said, hey, we've pled our allegiance to ISIS, and they were giving them weapons in mass numbers, and then not even giving them the weapon, they're giving them bodies to back that, to help them out. More money that builds together. When you bring them together, that's more money, and then they have a larger area that they can cover, and it makes it easier for them to move freely throughout the world.
And we've had plenty of training with Fast and Furious of arming people in Mexico with illegal gun and gun running. So it's just one of the things we do. We make a lot of guns and give them to people so then they can come and attack us. That's the old problem reaction
but
solution.
They want to have I think they want something here on American soil. That's how they get that FEMA camp thing enacted, because we already saw how quick, I've said it before, in Ferguson, we can go into that martial law state. They want to have people scared. They want people feel like they need that government. They need more police. Like, look, if you don't have police, ICE is going to come in here and they're going to kill your family. So you need us running up and down the streets with tanks, with MRAPs, with sniper rifles on top so you can be safe. Meanwhile, we're losing every liberty we have right there. But people will ignore that. They won't even pay attention because they'll be so scared by this Frankenstein that the Obama administration has created.
Powerful stuff, guys. We're going to be back with more. These guys are going to join us for one more segment. Leanne McAdoo, Joe Biggs, and then we have Lord Mockton via Skype. We'll be right back.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. We're going to be live here for the next 2 hours. And this is our last segment with Leanne McAdoo and Joe Biggs. And then coming up next segment, we're going to have Lord Christopher Mockton via Skype talking about Scottish independence and the latest climate change fear-mongering that isn't working. Well, we've already got snow up in the north. But hey, guys,
the climate's changing. Anytime it changes, we got to do something.
Even though no matter what we do, we couldn't spend enough money to change the climate and reverse any effects that were happening, most likely from the sun, through volcanoes, through natural processes. The climate changes people all the time. Whether we're here or not, it doesn't matter. The climate will change. It will continue to change. Mm. Please stop with the climate change nonsense.
Sound like a terrorist.
I know.
You're going to be on a watch list.
Yeah, I might. Going back to Ebola and ISIS and everything else we've been talking about, you were just showing me an article that the Joint Chiefs have now approved U.S. troops boots on the ground, whereas they said before it wasn't going to happen. It was just going to be airstrikes, and now it's boots on the ground. Then it's another base. We're going to build a base right on the border of Syria to help out.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what he said. The top U.S. military leader opened the door Tuesday to U.S. troops on the ground in the fight against the Islamic State, testifying before Congress that he could recommend U.S. military ground forces if the international coalition being formed proves ineffective against this group. You know, right now, ISIS is doing what we want. You know, they're doing what the government needs them to do right now, help topple these different regimes that they want out of power so we can move in and bring in our laws and our stuff like that. Once they get too big, see, this is the thing. We have the biggest military there is. We could take these guys out in a matter of days if we really wanted to.
We are letting the monster terrorize the villagers.
Yeah. Right.
That's what we're doing. And at some point, we're going to come out with a secret weapon that'll decapitate ISIS's regime and take them down. And then, now we have a power vacuum. Now nobody's here. Now we have to implant our own government because, the first time we tried it, it didn't work. The second time we tried it, it didn't work. And now maybe the 10th time we've tried it, regime change in the Middle East. And maybe now it'll work. Yeah, that's not going to work.
I think it's 10th time's a charm, isn't it? Isn't that how it goes?
Right. Well, and just like they're wanting to allow them to attack the villagers there, it's the same thing that's going to be happening here at our border. It's just a matter of time before they can make it work for them. Currently, they don't want to talk about ISIS at the border because that is going to go against this whole immigration issue. They want to downplay the terror. Meanwhile, the Democrats are saying that opponents of the president are just trying to play up the concerns of terror so they can say that he failed. But it's all about this immigration. I bet as soon as the election's over and everything, then they can start using this as a terror threat too.
Well, that's when they're going to grant amnesty. And then they're going to say, we don't really need a border anymore. We're just going to let everybody in. And we don't need the National Guard on the border. Oh, that's fear-mongering. They're going after the militia that's just trying to help and try to do the job of the government.
Yeah, the militia, these are hardworking Americans who have families, who are teachers, who are doctors, dentists, things like that, who are coming from, inland, from Michigan, Chicago, places like that, down to the border because they see a problem that the government neglects to take care of. And what they're saying now is Texas police prepare to defend international bridges from militia groups. People just trying to help what they're not able to do themselves. And they follow the laws. They sit out there. They talk. They make themselves known, like, hey, we're just here to help. You know, if we're interfering with anything, let me know.
They identify themselves and they still get fired upon by Border Patrol.
Yes.
So Border Patrol is treating them hostile. And these guys...
But there's still people coming across the border.
Oh, I know, exactly. That's not stopping.
We're more worried about what's inside our bubble than the evil that's trying to penetrate our country. They don't care about that.
No.
We're the threat. We're the ones that they're worried about. We're the domestic terrorists, the returning vets.
We've got dictionaries. We've got money from different countries, not Mexico, Chinese, Pakistani. They're bringing these people in.
Prayer rugs.
And we don't know who's coming through because we're not concerned about the border. Guys, thanks for joining me. We're going to be right back after this with Lord Christopher Mocton. Strap yourselves in. It's going to be an amazing hour here at the Alex Jones Show, Infowars.com.
Smithing and do all kinds of things.
You even sell guns.
We even...
God, a rabble slave with a weapon. Disarm him. Get the guards. Disarm him immediately. It's one of the slaves has a weapon. Raise the alarm.
I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. And yet have an assumption without a presumption to know what's going on. Then I can throw bananas at the global clowns and hear aristocratic moans. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. I went looking one day on the internet just to see what I could find. When I heard this talk show maniac just proudly speaking his mind. It was really wild, but the more I heard, it made a whole lot of sense to me. I want to thank you, Alex, for opening my eyes and helping the blind to see. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. And yet have an assumption without a presumption to know what's going on. Then I can throw bananas at the global clowns and hear aristocratic moans. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones.
And if you're watching live on PrisonPlanet.tv or on Infowars.com/show, you can see some of the video here behind this Robert Trombi music video that we put together. Crazy like Alex Jones. Some amazing stuff there is as the Joker trying to take over that meme.
All the talking heads on the TV screen with an arrogant sophistication. Talking about what's been going on around the world and here in the nation. They all seem to turn like a pack of wolves when Alex goes on the air. In spite of the facts, they launch their attacks, and I just don't think it's fair. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. And yet have an assumption without a presumption that no one's going on. I can throw bananas at the global clowns and hear aristocratic moans. I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones. Yeah, I want to be crazy, crazy like Alex Jones.
I'm your Christian leader. Never mind Skull and Bones. Never mind Bohemian Grove. Never mind my actual policies. Just buy my rhetoric, buy my lies, because you're my slaves. We're going to put in a Democrat later who works for the exact same people, and you're going to love it then when they do it. All you Democrats that hate the Patriot Act and all you Democrats that hate the police state, you're suddenly going to love it.
And they do love it. They love it. They want the draft now. The liberals are calling for the draft and to raise taxes to go fight ISIS. Who knew that the liberals could be just as big a warmongers as the conservatives and the Republicans? That's why it's called the left-right paradigm, because they're both controlled by the same puppet master. That's right. And that was Robert Ombe, crazy like Alex Jones. Our guest coming up now, Lord Christopher Mocton. He was special advisor to Margaret Thatcher from 1982 to 1986. Since then, he has been speaking out on a variety of topics, mainly global warming, climate change. His website is called scienceandpublicpolicy.org. And Lord Mocton is actually parachuted behind enemy lines to get the truth out. There's footage of him jumping off of a plane and parachuting into a climate conference where they were trying not to let him in. And he was bound and determined to get in. He's an amazing individual. I've met him personally in D.C., interviewed him. We put that interview out a few years ago. And in fact, there's the footage there. He's about to jump out. And let's bring him on in. Lord Christopher Mockton, how are you doing today, sir?
Well, you won't get any aristocratic moans from me, I'll tell you that for sure. You're going to need to change the song a little, I think.
Well, you know, here in the United States, we do kind of look down at aristocrats. But you being a lord, you're one of the good guys. And I think you're a rare really breed. Kind of. Go ahead.
I say that's really kind of you. I hope you're properly, as Alex always is when talking to me, on one knee, wearing white gloves, touching forelock, bowing low, and the correct form of address is as follows. My lordship, would your lordship be so good as to allow me to address your lordship? Then we get on just fine.
I'll try not to look you in the eye, my lordship. I'm very sorry, my lordship. Please tell me where the United States is going wrong as a country.
Well, the United States needs to deal with the matter of Mr. Obama's birth certificate, for one thing. You need to start finding a backbone in the GOP. I want to see it fighting a lot harder. I want it to find an intelligent, strong candidate, preferably from the Tea Party, to be the next president of the United States. And I want to make sure that in the midterms you've got coming up now, you will return the GOP both to the House and to the Senate. Then we can start making things better in the United States.
Well, let's just make sure it's the right people in the GOP. And, you know, there's even some good liberals out there, I'll admit. I think Dennis Kucinich was great. I wish he was still around. And but yeah, there's an article came out today from Paul Joseph Watson, top lib. I'd lay money on Rand Paul being the next president. So there you go.
Well,
we could see it.
That would certainly ginger things up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would definitely shake some things up. Hopefully it would change our stance on going into other countries and meddling in their business and sending troops all over the place. Let's get right into Scottish independence. I know you probably have a different opinion than us rabble rousers here in the United States. How do you feel about Scottish independence? Are you a yay or a nay?
Well, I'm very definitely a nay. We want to keep the United Kingdom united. And I wanted to brief your boys on this because, look, I know that Scottish John, or whoever he was, some numpty that you had on before, was trying to say that if you vote yes to Scottish independence, this will mean that there will be no such thing as a new world order. Well, let's be very clear. The so-called Scottish, so-called nationalist, so-called party that is behind this nonsensical bid for Scottish independence, these are the people who would like to see the new world order. These are people on the far left of British politics. They used to be called, 30 years ago, the Tartan Tories. Then they were taken over by Alex Salmond, and he has dragged them way to the far left. He now has a bureaucratic centralist administration in Scotland. His people have been going round intimidating those who disagree with him. And when, for instance, the leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party, Nigel Farage, came to Scotland, first to Edinburgh, then to Aberdeen, in both places, Alex Salmond's bully boys were there to try and mob up the meeting and cause violence. And they've been doing this all over Scotland. This is a dangerous party, and there is the reek of extremism about everything that it does. And they do not believe in anything that the Alex Jones show believes in. They do not believe in freedom. They do not believe in democracy. They believe in simply belonging still to the European Union. But there they're going to face a very interesting difficulty. You see, if Scotland actually becomes separate from the United Kingdom, it also leaves, by that act, the European Union, because the United Kingdom is a member of the European Union. You leave the United Kingdom, you leave the European Union. Scotland would then have to reapply to join, and it wouldn't qualify to join. This hasn't even been said in the newspapers so far. It hasn't come up in the debates, because the debates have been shallow and largely emotional. And so what I wanted to do is to put across a few of the central facts. And the first thing is that whatever else you're voting for, if you vote for independence on tomorrow, as it now is, you will not get independence, because Alex Salmond wants to drag Scotland straight back into the European Union, which makes something like 5 laws in 6 for Scotland. Now, this is an extraordinary state of affairs. You have somebody who is claiming to give the people independence. What he's actually going to do, as his first act, is to try to enslave them once again to the European Union. And that is going to fail. The European Union is elected by no one. It's a self-appointed oligarchy, a tyranny by Clark. And that, too, doesn't believe in anything the Alex Jones Show believes in. So anyone who listens to the Alex Jones Show, who is even thinking of voting yes to so-called independence, my first word for you is just don't.
Well, what about this? Why are there so many people wanting independence in the first place? Why do they feel like they're being handed a raw deal from the UK?
From West. Well, the first thing is, I don't think there are that many. It's always convenient to the no campaign to have people think that the gap is a very narrow one, and that perhaps even there might be a yes vote, because that will make sure that the no campaigners turn out in large numbers and really fight this nonsense and make sure their vote goes in the no box on the ballot paper. But you see, when Alex Salmond tries to rejoin the European Union, he'll find he can't, because the financial situation of Scotland is dire. And the only reason why Scotland prospers is for the very reason why it became joined to the United Kingdom in 1707 in the first place, because it had invested in a boondoggle called the Darien Venture, rather like investing in climate change today. It was a complete waste of money, and Scotland went bankrupt. And the only way it could save itself from outright starvation right across the land was to join the United Kingdom, whereupon prosperity took off like a rocket. And the great new town in Edinburgh was built, which is where I live at the moment, a very elegant neoclassical town, a lot of money spent on building really charming buildings, some of the finest in the world. Suddenly Scotland was prosperous, and it has remained prosperous throughout the last 300 years. But those inward English subsidies to Scotland, once they go, Scotland is left with a black hole in its finances. And the black hole is a big one. It's equivalent to somewhere between 8...
Lord Mockton, I got to stop you. We're going to break. I do want to say this. The Scots have been wanting independence for an awful long time. This isn't something new that has been going on. So we're going to talk about that when we come right back. It's the Alex Jones Show. It's our guest, Lord Mockton. You can find more on InfoWars.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We are back live. It's the Alex Jones Show. You can find us here 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday, and back Sunday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central. All those times are Central. You can find more information at InfoWars.com. You can also become a member of PrisonPlanet.tv. And your subscription helps support what you see here, sending our reporters out in different areas. And you could share your username and password with up to 11 people. So it's 11 memberships for the price of one, prisonplanet.tv. And if you just want to watch a free video stream right now, you can go to infowars.com/show and watch the free live stream. Lots of things going on. During the break, I looked up a couple things. There's a New York Times article out. Many questions arise from Scottish independence vote. And there are some questions. It is run by a more leftist organization, which probably means more government once an independence vote were to take place. Also, the per capita government spending is higher than the rest of Britain and in Scotland. It is. They spend more money than they take in. They're sort of a welfare child state of England. And in CNN World, UK party leaders promised Scotland new powers ahead of key independence votes. So that's if they stay in the union, then they're going to get more power. So maybe this is some kind of clannish type power play. When I say clan, I don't mean like the KKK, what we have here. I'm talking about the Scottish clans. If you look back at Scottish history, a lot of it is based on these clan families coming together and fighting for independence, but also double crossing each other in many instances. So maybe this is just a power play. Lord Mockton's our guest. What do you think when you look at the historical significance of Scotland wanting its independence from England? and then what we have now. How is it different? How is it different? I guess that's my question.
Okay, let me begin just by finishing off where I was before the break. 8% and 13% of GDP, somewhere between those figures, that's how much the annual deficit of Scotland will be. In other words, they're going to need a subsidy to the extent of 1 month in every 12, roughly, that they're working. And that is a very bad starting position for a supposedly independent new state, because, as you rightly say, it has become a sort of socialist nirvana. It's rather like a communist country in the percentage of GDP that the enormous state sector has, because, for instance, 1/5 of the population, I kid you not, 1 in 5 of the population are collecting what is called disability benefit. This is a nation which is a sick nation. It's a bankrupt nation if it stands on its own. If it stands together with England, it's a strong nation. So paradoxically, the historical national consciousness of Scotland, which was really created almost artificially and rather bloodily by Robert the Bruce, who was himself of English origin, the same kind of emotional nationalism now will cost Scotland very dear indeed, because Scotland is not in a financial position to stand on her own feet. If I had really wanted independence for Scotland, and I had been Alex Salmond, then I would have worked very hard to make Scotland more prosperous and less dependent on subsidy than the rest of the United Kingdom. I would have had a small government and not a large and bloated government. I would have tried to wean people gradually and responsibly off welfare so that they could stand on their own feet and not be dependent effectively at the moment on the English taxpayer. And let me make this also plain to you. It's a very important point on the finances here. If in 2008, when the world banking crash happened, Scotland had been independent then because of the Scottish bank's very large exposure to this disaster, Scotland would have gone bankrupt overnight, and bankrupt to a degree worse even than in the Darien venture 300 years ago, which led to independence because they had to join with England to survive financially in the first place. Scotland is in no position to go independent. If Scotland were to go independent, most of the financial sector would have to move out, and for international legal reasons, most of Scotland's banks would have to get rid of almost all their capital assets in the shape of their loans. They would no longer be able to have a large loan book. So the taxation which is now collected from the Scottish banks, which is quite large, would disappear. The oil revenues, and this was always oil-fired nationalism, they are in rampant decline. They will be stable at a very low level for the next 5 years. They will then plummet again to almost nothing. And yet, at the moment, the Scottish so-called government, as it likes to call itself, is trying to pretend there will be a far larger revenue from North Sea oil than any independent analyst thinks realistic. This is fantasy land on steroids. So that I just wanted to get across. Anyone who is thinking of voting for independence, you are voting for an annual cost per household calculated by an independent economist for the Scottish Research Society, of which I'm secretary. And you can go to ScottishResearchSociety.com to read your report. You will find that the cost per household...
We're going to break, Lord Mockton. We'll be right back. We're going to let you finish up on that point. Then we're going to talk about the global warming charade that's going on right now. It's the Alex Jones Show.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network. Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones.
It's the time of the season.
Welcome back, and we are live on this September 16th, 2014 edition of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. You can watch us live on prisonplanet.tv or infowars.com/show if you're at your computer and you want to see the massive amounts of articles I have in front of me. If you'd like to see Lord Mockton on TV calling us from the UK, where they have an important vote going on in just 2 days. It's going to be Thursday. The Scots will vote on whether they want to secede from the United Kingdom. Last week, we had Scottish John here in studio talking with Alex and how he thought it was a good thing and that would stop the New World Order, dead in its tracks. Lord Mocton has a 180 degree opinion on that. He doesn't believe in it. But, you know, I'd like to look at this. We have Catalonia, which is talking about going independent. Texas has talked about it. Northern California is talking about seceding from Southern California and creating a new state, actually, within the United States. Some counties there in Northern California and in Southern Oregon. So this is happening, and why is it happening? People are kind of fed up with these giant centralized bureaucracies. There's the article from The Guardian. Catalonian MPs set to approve law on independence vote, and they had millions of people out in the streets marching for independence. We saw Ireland basically kind of change its economy. It was about 15 years ago. They started getting into technology, and they kind of changed the way their economy ran. It's not the best in the world. Could Scotland do this? Could they revamp what they're doing now and make themselves prosperous if they were independent as opposed to being under the UK? Lord Mocton, that's my question I propose to you.
All right. Well, let's just finish off on the point I was on. Each household will find that it has to pay an extra £3,500 to £5,500 a year. That's about what? $5,500 to $9,000 a year. That's how much the cash cost of independence is going to be to each household in Scotland. You took Ireland as an example there. Let me answer that one for you. Ireland is now one of the most indebted countries in the world. It's hopelessly in debt. It's seen its house prices plummet by 30 or 40%. It's seen drastic cuts in the public sector to try and balance the books, and they're still not balanced. That's certainly no example to Scotland. And the romanticism, which I share, you know, I love the history of Bonnie Prince Charlie coming from France to take over Scotland, which he succeeded in doing. He went down to England as far south as Derby. If only he'd had the courage to carry on. The government in England, in London, was already planning to flee, and he would have formed the government and united Scotland, but under a Scottish king. It so nearly happened. But you see, it didn't. And in the end, Scotland at the moment is simply incapable of standing on her own feet economically. But it isn't just economics. If you go to page one of Macaulay's Great History of England, one of the finest works of literature in the English language, it's beautifully written, and it's also sharply observed. And on page one, he says this, that after centuries of warfare, Scotland was at length bound to England by indissoluble ties of interest and affection. Because it's not just about the money. It's not just about the fact that Scotland remains dependent on the United Kingdom financially. It's also that this has been a very successful union by any standard. The moment Scotland had been united with England, the British Empire began to form. And for nearly 100 years, we found ourselves ruling a quarter of the globe. The Pax Britannica was universal. Britannia ruled the waves. Britannia, not just England, but Scotland as well, was part of that. Scotland, as part of England, stands as part of one of the most successful nations in international diplomacy to this day in the world. Scotland, as part of the United Kingdom, is therefore much stronger and, paradoxically, more independent than she would be if she decided to throw all this away. And I was talking to the train guard on the train from Edinburgh to Dundee the other day, and I had a lot of copies of the economic assessment that Ewan Stewart has done for the Scottish Research Society.com, and I was showing this to him. And he said, well, I'm voting for independence. I'm voting on the basis of emotion. I'm voting with my heart, he said. And I said, look, I never tell anybody not to vote with their heart. What I would say to you is it might be worth your while just to count the cost first so that you can decide whether it makes any sense to vote with your heart. So I gave him a copy of the 64-page economic analysis we'd had done. I said, even if you only read the first paragraph, it'll summarize the main points there. The first three pages go into it in more detail. Then you can look at 64 pages. Every individual topic is covered. What is Scotland's currency going to be? At the moment, Alex Salmond has given up the idea of independence in terms of issuing his currency. He said, oh, we'll let Britain do that. But if Scotland wants to use Britain's currency, but Scotland isn't part of a currency union with Britain, then Scotland will not have a seat at the table at the Bank of England, as it does now, to form the monetary policy of Britain. So it will not, in this very crucial extent, it won't be independent at all, just as it won't be independent if it rejoins the European Union, just as it won't be independent if it continues to run an enormous financial deficit, and it will eventually be in hoc to the people to whom it owes money. There's no way that a vote for independence on Thursday will actually give you independence, even if the vote is yes. So why not vote no, stand by the Union, not only for practical reasons, but also for reasons of affection. Of course, we have this love-hate relationship between Scotland and England, largely maintained these days by sporting contests of one kind or another, particularly the rugby, at which, alas, Scotland hasn't been doing too well recently. But it is really absurd for anyone to think that Scotland is going to be a strong and prosperous and independent nation if it goes independent. So let us hope that everybody will have the common sense and the strength of will to vote this ludicrous proposal down, and therefore to prevent what would effectively be the entrenchment of something not in economic terms different from communism all over Scotland.
And that would be a very interesting prospect, a communist country, openly communist, if they were to become openly communist, right in the middle of Europe. That would definitely, although you could say a lot of Europe is communist or socialist to one degree or another. That's one way of looking at it. Where can you find your report, your 64-page report?
Yes, what you do is you go to Scottish Research Society, or one word, .com, ScottishResearchSociety.com. You go on there, you'll find a lot of news and facts about the independence referendum. You'll find several reports by us, but the most important one is this economic assessment. This is the assessment the Scottish so-called government should have done. This is the assessment the United Kingdom government should have done. If it had done that assessment early enough, then nobody would have even dreamt of continuing with the idea of having a referendum on independence. They would have realised the game was up. It simply can't be afforded, and the damage to Scotland would be enormous. You see, the structure, the government structure that has already been put in place by Alex Salmond is a bureaucratic centralist, heavily expensive. The state owns everything. The state nationalizes the land. The state grasps all the businesses. The state centralizes the police. We no longer have police forces in each county. We now have a single national police force, just as they used to do in the Soviet Union.
Well, hear me out real quick. What if they do vote for independence, and then they do collapse under their own weight of a bureaucracy, and then they decide they have to change? Wouldn't that be an example for the world, saying that, look, communism and big government doesn't work? You have to give people control over their own lives. Isn't that what these people just want in the end? And what if that happens? You know, this guy just came into power. Who's to say he can't be voted out of power? Maybe I'm an idealist. I don't know. But
the value to the rest of the world of learning that lesson, but I do not want to see the damage to Scotland that would happen in the meantime. The fact is, this is really a crazy proposal by crazy people. You see, Alex Salmond has never had to take governmental responsibility because at one level, he's part of the EU, so most of his laws are made by the EU, and the daft wee parliament at Holyrood is merely a rubber stamp. And most of his money comes not from his own taxpayers, who contribute less per head than most of the United Kingdom, but from London. So he's not independent and will not be independent after independence. As I've just said, there's no way that Scotland, with anything like its present government system, can afford to stand on its own two feet. So here is what's going to happen if Scotland votes for independence. Most people, and I mean most people, whose primary livelihood comes from the state, will either have that livelihood substantially cut, and I mean a cut of something like 10 to 20%, or they will lose their jobs altogether. If you think you're going to sit there, paid by the state, when Scotland becomes independent, whether you're paid to work or paid through a state pension or paid through a civil service pension or paid through benefits or disability benefits or getting free health care, all of those things you will no longer get to the same degree or anything like the same degree that you get them now. And everyone who has looked at the economics of Scotland has come to the same conclusion. If you think I'm making up a scare story to try to terrify people into voting no, no, I'm not. The independent assessment of Ewan Stewart, available at ScottishResearchSociety.com, makes it entirely clear how insane, and that's the word that he privately used to me, so I won't put that in the document, but this is the most insane proposal I have ever had to analyse. He said, in a way, I really didn't like to do it. He said, I'm a Scot, I love Scotland, I really don't want to see this happen. And that is the view of all of us at the Scottish Research Society. So do go to ScottishResearchSociety.com and find this out for yourselves. We must keep Scotland part of the United Kingdom, because otherwise there will be effectively yet another communist country. It won't be called communist, but that is how it will run its economy. Heavily centralised, heavily based on the state, private sector nowhere, massive taxation, nationalisation of land. They're already doing that. It's about the only country in Europe where nationalisation of land is actually taking place as we speak. I bet you haven't seen that in any of the newspapers. But that's what's going on. And if that continues under independence, it will accelerate. So if you own your house or you own a patch of land, however small, in no time at all, the Scottish state
it will be absorbed by the evil Scots who want independence. We got Lord Christopher Mockton as our guest. He agrees with David Cameron, who is also begging the Scots not to leave the UK. We've got a little bit more time. I do want to switch to climate change news, because that is where you are also an expert on. It seems anything you get into, you become an amazing expert and an eloquent speaker on the topic. I want to go, Obama is going after a new coolant. And also we've seen this evidence of hasn't been any climate change. We're actually cooling down. At least we haven't been warming up. What is the latest in the climate change? What's the latest in the news there?
Here goes. First of all, if you are in high school, however senior you are, you will never have lived under global warming. There has been no global warming now, believe it or not, for just on 18 years. And this is the, according to the RSS, that's Remote Sensing Systems, satellite monthly data set, which I analyze every month. And you can go to whatsupwiththat.com, or you can go to climatedepot.com, or you can go to scienceandpublicpolicy.org, and you can find these regular monthly assessments of the temperature record, and it now shows a zero least squares linear regression trend. And that's a way of processing the data to establish which way it's heading. And so far, for the last 18 years now, there has been no global warming at all. Zero. Nada. Zip. Zilch.
But that's because we put up a ton of windmills and solar panels, right? I mean,
if only. They have made no difference to the amount of carbon dioxide that's being emitted to the atmosphere, which is continuing to rise. And that's the startling thing. The carbon dioxide is rising at rapid and record levels, according to the United Nations, and according to the record, for instance, at your own Mauna Loa research station. And yet, despite that record rise in the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, which is what's supposed to be causing all this warming, the warming is not happening. And I got a professor of physics onto me the other day. He said, have they even got the basic science of how much of a radiative effect CO2 in the atmosphere has? Have they got any evidence based on observation and measurement of what that value should be? And I said, yes, I thought I did. A professor had told me that he had done the original research on this. And I said, I put the professor in touch with the other professor, who said, actually, no, I didn't do it observationally. I did it by yet another computer model. So all of this scare comes out of computer models, which turn out in just about every material respect to be wrong. In fact, the rate of global warming since the UN's climate panel produced the first of its five leaden, multi-thousand-page assessment reports in 1990, 25 years ago, the rate of global warming since then is exactly half of what was then predicted with substantial confidence. Well, that substantial confidence was substantially misplaced. And these are the people, having got every single forecast wrong, who are trying to tell us we must shut down the West in the name of saving the planet. But, of course, the Alex Jones listeners know perfectly well that we don't need to save the planet, because the planet was triumphantly saved 2,000 years ago, and it doesn't need to be saved again.
I would totally agree with you. The planet will take care of itself. We need to take care of what we do, and we need to stop, I think, funding wars, maybe taking deadly pathogens and mixing them with deadly flus and see if they could come together and then losing them. I mean, there's a whole host of issues we could keep control of that we're not keeping control of. But let me tell you, the climate is not one of them, because why? We cannot control the sun. No matter how much we think we can, we cannot control the amount of energy that the sun puts out. And when those levels go up and down, that is what changes our climate. It's volcanic activity. We're not plugging up any volcanoes. There's not enough concrete in the world to plug up volcanoes. And it just can't be done. Those are the types of things we would have to do to stop climate change. It would cost too much money to do any of that anyway. And we're not even warming. So I thought that was what the scare was, that we were warming up, and that's not happening. Lord Mokhtar, we're going to come back in a short segment. I just want to remind everybody, next hour, we're going to have an Alex Jones and William Biddy interview. And this is a premier NSA whistleblower. This guy was an NSA whistleblower when Snowden was in college. So he's been around the block. We've had plenty of NSA whistleblowers on here before Snowden. Snowden just gave us names and dates to things that we already knew were happening. But I want to ask you a quick question, and I'll probably let you answer this when we get back from the break. Nigel Farage was on Neil Cavuto's show last week, and he recently said that because of this ISIS problem, we're going to have to give up our liberty for security. He was channeling a bizarro Ben Franklin, saying something exactly opposite of what Ben Franklin said. And we've also had senators come out like Patrick Leahy and say, if we stop the NSA from spying on people, it's only going to help ISIS, yet we leave our southern border wide open. I'm going to let you answer that question when we come back and cover anything else you want to in that last segment. It's the Alex Jones Show. You're watching us live. We're going to be here till 2 p.m. Central. The websites are Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, PrisonPlanet.tv, and Infowars.com/show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. We'll be right back. Our final segment with Lord Mokhtar. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to have William Biddy with Alex Jones. He's the former technical leader for intelligence with the NSA. He became a whistleblower in 2001. And he's got a lot to say, even with the Snowden revelations. He goes places that Snowden didn't go a long time ago. He was one of the best analysts and codebreakers in NSA's history. This guy is a bona fide expert. He's going to be with us in the next hour. Right now, we have Lord Mokhtar for this final segment. And I was just listening to the ad about the water filtration as we came out of break. And when I met Lord Mokhtar, he was in person in D.C. He was telling me how he has his water filtration system set up. Lord Mokhtar, why don't you tell us about that? And then I want you to get into what Nigel Farage said about that we have to give up our liberty for security.
About the water very briefly. I mean, we get our water on our estate in the Highlands from a natural lake. It's Loch Rannoch. It's actually bacteriologically pure most of the time, but occasionally pollutants get in, mostly from animals round about. And so we run our water, first of all, through a double sand filter. That takes out the solid peat that, of course, gets into the water all over Scotland from the mountains and makes it dark. So once we've clarified the water, then we run it through an ultraviolet filter, which kills any remaining bacteria that may be present. And nobody's died yet, so we think it's working rather well.
There you go. That's independence for you right there. Even in Scotland, even by not wanting Scottish independence, you're being independent by filtering your own water, not depending on the state to bring it to you. Now let's finish up with Nigel Farage. Do you believe we should give up our liberty for security in the threat of ISIS, a group that we're actually funding?
No, I don't think we should give up our liberty. But what is the point of giving up our liberty for the sake of liberty? That's not how it works. What we do need to do is deal with one outstanding problem, which has been left on one side by the West for reasons of political correctness, and that is that the Quran contains passages which are illegal at United States law, at UK law, and also at Australian law. I'm in Australia at the moment. And each of those laws, we have a provision that says that incitement to murder is a serious imprisonable offense. There are several passages in the Quran. They are known as the sword verses. They've long been known to be a problem, which is why they've even been given their own name, which recommend that Muslims should kill those who do not believe in Islam. And you see how easy it is for an imam in the mosque to get hold of impressionable youngsters, read these passages to them, and say, look, the Prophet Muhammad in his holy book says you've got to go and kill the unbeliever. And that's how they are succeeding in radicalizing each other. So what do we do about this? We're not in the business of banning books either. What I think we need to do is to require that all copies of the Quran contain a warning that if anyone reads any of these sword verses out loud, then they could be prosecuted for incitement to murder and locked up for a very long time. And all of these passages, and it amounts, believe it or not, to something like 62% of the entire Quran, which are attacking the unbeliever and saying he should be killed, those should be printed in boldface and in red, and at the front it should say, these are the passages which, if you read them out loud, you can be prosecuted for incitement to murder. I think we cannot go on allowing one standard for the rest of us where we are not allowed to say things or print things that incite other people to murder, whereas they, simply because they call it a holy book, are allowed to do so. I don't want to ban the Quran, but I do want to make it clear to Muslims all over the Western world that those passages in the Quran which incite to murder are illegal at our law, and they must stop reciting them out loud.
That was the final word. Lord Mocton, I got to break in right there. We're going to break. And this has been the Alex Jones Show. We'll be back with William Binney.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Up on Infowars.com, the ISIS Bucket Obama Challenge. And we have another video. Man dressed as ISIS jihadi crosses borders, simulates beheading in a major city. Just to illustrate, the border's wide open. But then they've got the TSA groping everybody. The war on terror is a hoax and a fraud. This is meant to expose the hoax, not bolster it. I'm like the progenitor of exposing the war on terror as a hoax day one, not bragging the granddaddy of it. So fools out there going, hey, Al-Qaeda works for the globalists. Yeah, I know, but it's like turning starving pit bulls loose on a bloody child. Just because you run the dogs doesn't mean they're not real. Trying to explain that. It's a globalist destabilization force so people can't live on their own, so they beg for centralized government. Problem, reaction, solution. They try to create anarchy, so you beg for the state, instead of letting natural anarchy through free association grow. Now, Julia, other points that are important to make here. How do you see them striking back, and how do you see Bitcoin making the old system obsolete? Because some could argue that they know the old system's going down, SDR is going to be fiat, that they actually might be behind Bitcoin because they want it to be the new system.
Yeah, I just don't buy it because, you know, it's incredibly difficult. You can't control it. You can't really it's difficult to censor. And just like imagine doing an audit on Bitcoin. It's very, very difficult, much more difficult than the systems we have in place right now. What they would like is just a pure cashless society where we use credit cards for everything and government issued cards. Bitcoin is outside of that system. So I don't think it's favorable for that kind of, I don't think it fits into that a conspiracy theory at all. But regarding the regulation,
I agree with you. I don't think they're behind it. And the fact that its first message was against the banker bailout when it showed up 4 or 5 years ago, I think it's some type of super smart insider who's protesting the whole system.
Yeah, it's, I mean, to say that it's the government conspiracy, I think it's giving governments way too much credibility. I just don't believe it. I think it's an individual or small group of individuals that are innovative and have had a freedom in their intention. And so, but let's talk about the regulation, because this is a big deal right now. The New York State Department of Financial Services and Superintendent Ben Lasky, they've proposed a bit license for the state of New York. And it's incredibly overreaching and it stifles innovation. And I like to call it the ban on human interaction, because It defines cryptocurrency very broadly, and it states things like all the companies have to have fingerprints of all of their employees, background checks of people who are using their services. You have to be like, your information has to be submitted if you make a transaction that's more than $3,000. It's really, really, really insane. And all the companies are actually leaving the state because they can't afford. You have to hire like 3 different regulation officers, compliance officers. So little companies are actually going to be destroyed if they do choose to stay in New York. And this is what happened in England with the automobile regulations. Guess what? America won the automobile race easily because they were so heavily regulated that nobody could do anything. And it's so overreaching that now, if anybody wants to transact with a company that is located in New York, they have to fall under those regulations too. So companies are going to have to deny, companies outside of New York are going to actually deny customers that live in New York.
And then people will flee California and New York, come to Texas and act just the same way and ruin it again, not smart enough to know that they shouldn't crap in their own house.
Exactly, Alex. And I have a good friend who's been in the headlines in the Bitcoin community quite a bit, and he had a business, and he's going to be moving to Austin, most likely.
Awesome. Well, we got to get you in studio. Julia Turianski, thank you so much for spending time with us. The website is bravetheworld.com. Julia Turianski.
That's Brave the World.
All right, absolutely, bravetheworld.com. Thank you so much. All right, we'll be back with the top NSA whistleblower.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center and the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Gentlemen, we are back live. Thank you so much for joining us in this third hour of this Friday edition. I am your host, Alex Jones. I'll be back this Sunday live in studio with the Sunday edition, 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time as well. InfoWars Nightly News is tonight, 7 o'clock Central. Well, a few months ago, it made big news across the world. Here was the headline. The ultimate goal of the NSA is total population control. That's William Edward Binney. He's the former technical leader for intelligence with the NSA. That's at the very top of it. Before becoming a whistleblower in late 2001, after more than 30 years with the agency, Binney has been described as one of the best analysts and codebreakers in NSA history. Binney continues to speak out about the NSA's data collection policies and continues interviews in the media. And again, it's amazing that he's so high level and has the courage to speak out despite their attempts to silence him. ExposeFacts.org has some of his information there. I wanted to get him on the last few weeks. We're able to get him today because of headlines like this. Snowden, there's a holy S-word smoking gun revelation coming. Whistleblower says government believes he has information that would be the death of them all politically. Well, then please release it, because we've got a bunch of totalitarians running things. And he told Wired Magazine that. William Binney just came out with a group that I know is associated with people high up in the government and top analysts like Ray McGovern, ex-NSA director, U.S. intelligence veterans write open letter to Merkel to avoid all-out Ukraine war. Now the former ambassador to Russia has gone public saying the West is starting the war and has destabilized Ukraine. That's just the truth. So I'm going to get William Binney's breakdown on that. Also want to talk to him about parallel construction where other agencies like the DEA are using NSA data totally illegally and then creating fake court cases so the courts don't know where they got the data. This is just beyond 1984. So that's some of what we'll talk about in the next hour. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we've got your questions that you're tweeting to Real Alex Jones. We put a hashtag out there so you can tweet your questions to William Binney. We'll also take a few phone calls, specific questions for him, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, specific questions for William Binney. Mr. Binney, you heard me throw out that grouping of questions. Would you like to answer one of those first, or what do you think is most important that's currently happening right now?
Well, to me, what NSA, all the data NSA is collecting and being used by the police forces is really the most threatening situation to our constitutional republic since the Civil War. So to me, that's the most important thing. Because it affects everything we do. It involves everything that everybody in the country is doing. So, I mean, that's contrary to the founding documents of this nation.
Well, you're absolutely right. Last year, we were given secret documents from Homeland Security sources in Seattle. They were putting up their own cell towers, letting the local police even have access to it, grabbing everyone's data. Now I see headlines in CBS News, you name it, going, no one knows what the mystery cell towers are, but it's not the government because it's illegal to do that. I mean, we know what's going on. Can you speak to that?
Well, I think that's part of that is gathering information on movement of individuals. I mean, that's how you can track people moving around by acting, basically putting up false towers and getting everybody to ping off your tower. That way you know they're in the area. And you can monitor who they are and map them over time by the machine access codes that they have and the phone numbers and things. So it's not a matter of it's not a matter of them guessing anymore. They just track everybody, and it'd be a simple problem to align them, you know, with a program, compile them and track everybody individually. And all you have to do is point to them, say, where have you been for the last month or two, and you can see what you've been doing.
That's right. It's so good to talk to somebody that knows all of this and knows more than I even know, because I mean, I look at what's open source public every day. A decade ago, the British put these up in London as a beta test, as you know. They also did it in Berlin. They tracked everybody in real time for years. It's totally illegal. Now they're building this grid at billions of dollars of expense for their own internal communication system as well. Cameras, microphones, lifetime tracking of the cell phones. And then when the public says, what are these? They go, gee, we don't know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you.
Exactly. Crazy. Wow. Tell folks what parallel construction is. And why did you, I mean, obviously you can't talk about a lot of it, but why did you leave the NSA when you were one of the top people, one of the directors of it?
Well, I left in October 2001 because they started spying on everybody and assembling information on everyone in the United States. And it went first with phone numbers and then went into the Internet later on and very shortly thereafter. So it was very clear to me that they were pulling together all this knowledge as like a super Stasi state, basically. So NSA was becoming the new Stasi agency, you know. That's their new term, I guess. Never Say Anything is now the new Stasi agency, because even though their people are not necessarily using, they're assembling and making possible all this information and making it available to all the policing agencies of the federal government, that they in turn make it local to the local accessible to the local and state police. So it's really becoming a police state. That's exactly what East Germany was with the Stasi. And it was the primary reason why they did. That's why I left. So, I mean, that was the main reason I left, because I could see this coming. And parallel construction is the use of is how the police forces, federal, state, and local, use the NSA collected information, which fundamentally is not acquired with a warrant, and so therefore, it is all inadmissible directly, inadmissible in a court of law. And so therefore, what they do is they have to, whenever they find something through the NSA data, they direct local police force to arrest them and then say, now you do a parallel construction by using what you would consider normal policing techniques and like requesting things with warrants and things like that. And you get assemble that data and then you use that data to substitute for the NSA data that was originally used to arrest them. And you substitute the parallel constructed data in the courtroom, which I've called perjury. They're lying to the courts, and they're subverting our entire judicial process. And that's what happens when you allow this kind of assembly of information that's so much power. It's like J. Edgar Hoover on super steroids. So, this is not compatible with any form of democracy at all.
And whether it's Republican or Democratic administrations, Nixon or Obama, they all end up using the IRS, you name it, to persecute political enemies. Imagine what Hitler would have done with systems like this. These systems historically always end up getting abused. If you're just joining us, the former director of technical intelligence with the NSA, I've heard it described as one of the top four jobs there. So one of the heads of the NSA, William Edward Benning, is on with us right now. And I mean, a much bigger whistleblower, you could say, even though he hasn't released a lot of secret info, than Snowden. And so the media has somewhat tried to ignore him, but he's so big they can't. Without getting into anything that was classified, but we are dealing with open totalitarianism, so it's almost treason for any of us, even if something's classified, to not talk about it. I mean, what was it like to be in there? I mean, did they come in and say, okay, we're going to flip on all the switches and spy on everything now and focus on U.S. citizens and politicians? I mean, can you tell us, was there a moment or was it a process when you're there heading up, the NSA, and who comes into you? Was it the director of national intelligence? Who was it? Was it the president? Okay, we're now going to totally break the law and spy on everyone. And then you say, I'm out of here? Or how did that happen?
Actually, I was not supposed to know about this program at all because I was I had told them that I was going to leave in early 2002, so I was not supposed to know about what they were doing. But the problem with that was that they had to use the programs that we had developed there under that I had helped form within the SIGINT Automation Research Center, which is my laboratory at the time. So they had to use those programs, which meant they had to use the computer programmers that had developed it for me to install it in another place and get it up and running, because they were the only ones who knew how to make the code, set it up, make it running, and get data flowing in and working. So when they when they did that, they kept it all very secret, even inside NSA. And the reason, of course, was because it was an impeachable act. I mean, after all, spying on the U.S. citizens was a violation of the FISA laws. They were keeping the courts out of it. They only informed four people in Congress, the chair and ranking members of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, one of which was Nancy Pelosi, and that's why she later on said that the impeaching George Bush is off the table, because she had agreed to these programs from the beginning. So they were keeping it very secret, even from Congress. They didn't want any opposition. Because when that basically was the Total Information Awareness Program that was started in 2001.
Admiral Poindexter.
And if you remember, Admiral Poindexter came out in, I think it was 2003, advocating a TIA program, Total Information Awareness Program. And that's when everybody came down on it and terminated, and that's what Congress's reaction. So when they saw that reaction, they continued to see that they were, from their perspective, they were making the right decision by keeping it secret. It's just like their secret agreement to their secret interpretation of Section 215 of the Patriot Act. The fellow who wrote the Patriot Act, Representative Sensenbrenner, has already gone publicly and said that he never intended them to be able to do what they are doing, this bulk acquisition of information by using that Patriot Act. Well, that's violating the intent of Congress, and yet they're still doing that, and they're not spelling out, they're afraid to spell out to the American people exactly what they're doing and what their interpretation is of these laws that allows them to do it. They simply are assuming that if the Congress keeps passing these laws, then that's tacit agreement with what their secret interpretation is. And they're never really, they don't have the guts to come out and tell the American people out in the open what they're doing. So that's the real problem.
Well, you're right. That was a major, because I was on air at the time, when Poindexter wrote the op-ed for the New York Times, called Total Information Awareness, he said, your credit card, what you eat, where you go, everything you do, when you go to school, everything will be tracked in live time or the terrorists will kill you. People went, whoa, this is 1984, and you want private companies to run this? No way. So there was a backlash. So they tried to openly sell that when it blew up in their face. You know, as you said, they just went forward with it. But the biggest thing for me here is it's come out in England, as you know, that they've got the same system, and they use it against the parliament. The bureaucracy does. I mean, this is being used. This is not to stop Al-Qaeda or ISIS. This is pointed directly to American people. And now we've gone from it being secret to it being public, and then nothing's being done. I mean, where do you see this going?
Yeah, well, I see this as a very sad state of affairs. This is not the America I grew up in. I tell you, I could never understand why people would tolerate this kind of stuff. I've been advocating if these bozos keep reinforcing by passing the same laws over and over again that we, the people, should fire them, get them out of office because they're incompetent and they're not living up to their oath of office. We need to get rid of them. I mean, it doesn't matter, Democrat or Republican. I mean, the party has nothing to do with it. It has to do with whether or not you subscribe to the foundations of this country.
Well, I remember a listener sent me the link to thomas.loc.gov in 1998 and said, look at this. He was an engineer. Engineers would feed me info. I mean, I had engineers that told me they had big hubs and all the telecoms listening to everything. They would bring me diagrams. I had no idea what it meant and stick it in shredder machines because I'm no engineer, but I've been exposing this since day one, having other whistleblowers on. But I remember you know, seeing this information and finding it so hard to believe, but reporting on it, and now it's just out in the open. And I remember being sent documents that they had done a grant for Austin to put up 1,000-plus hidden microphones to listen to people, and they even had an algorithm program running locally that the feds had paid for that was NSA technology that you and others developed, I'm sure, that was keyword. And it was all there in the federal grant, just admission of microphones, key logging or word logging, whatever you call it. And I went on air and covered it, and people couldn't believe it. Then a week later, the local paper ran a big story whitewashing it, going, no, it's gunshot detector microphones. But the grant said it was microphones to listen to people. And then now this year, they announced nationwide they're putting microphones in, hidden in street sculptures. And it's in the Chicago Tribune, but they don't call it microphones. They go, the data clusters pick up wireless, environmental hazards, and listen to audio for signs of trouble. So it's just this mainlining of a 1984. Mr. Benny is a former director of one of the major areas of the NSA. I mean, microphones hidden is 1984, is it not?
Yes, I mean, of course, it's not just the microphones with the audio and looking at the video, for example, those things, but it's also all the electronic backgrounds that goes with it. Anything you're carrying with you, like a cell phone or any kind of transaction used with any kind of document, like your credit card transactions and all those kinds of things are all assembled, and that all becomes a profile, basically, of you. And by the way, they keep saying, well, we don't build profiles of people. No, they don't. The software does that. I mean, once you put the data in the base, it builds relationships, and that, in fact, is the profile. So anytime they want to look at you, all they have to do is point at you and say, give me his profile, and you get it. So it's not a matter of them not having it. They have the profile on everybody. And it's not done by people. That's another word game they play. They play all kinds of word games with people. You know, it's like we don't consider anything collected unless a person looks at it. Well, that doesn't stop them from collecting everything about everybody in the country. And that's what they're doing. And they're doing it through a program called Fairview, which is the main input program they have. If you go on the web and do a Google on Fairview, you know, and NSA, you'll get the slides that will show you. There's like 80 to 100 tap points inside the continental United States, the four lower 48 states, that show where they're tapping and collecting information off the fiber optic network.
And that was being put in, from what I was told and shown by engineers and later confirmed, at the telecom hubs all over the country at taxpayer expense, whole floors and whole rooms of cable companies, of AT&T, you name it, with all the data passing through it. Just outrageous. And then Bush walking around on TV in 2006 saying, oh, we don't listen to anybody in America, and playing the word game that the computers do, when they can go open your profile up and see the whole menu of everything you do laid out, what movies you see, what books you read, all your emails. Google admits they open your emails and read it. Sir, what do you make of Amazon and Google and Microsoft and Apple and all of their admissions that they are data mining and using and selling the data? I mean, it's not just the NSA.
Well, I mean, I look at that also as the same as the... It's not as bad as the government, because they can't come arrest you or do violent things
sure.
to you. But I mean, it's still a fundamental violation of privacy rights of individuals. I mean, and that's against, I believe, the Electronic Privacy Acts, Electronic Security Acts, and all that stuff that all were existing laws to try to give privacy to people in their electronic age. So, I mean, it's fundamentally, I don't think they should be allowed or permitted to do that either.
I totally agree with you. And expanding on that, what do you make of Kate Upton and all these stars with sex tapes and naked photos that they thought it was safe to send sex videos around or naked photos on an Apple cloud? What do you make of this whole cloud revolution?
Well, it's just access to more. It's just another means of accessing more data about individuals. I mean, anybody who puts information out there should assume that it's being scarfed up by the NSA. And then made available to the FBI and DEA and other government agencies.
Are our courts fundamentally now completely bankrupt? If for a decade they've been or more creating fake cases with data they stole, and then they lie and perjure to the court. I mean, that sounds like most of these convictions should be overturned.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and even the Solicitor General had to lie to the Supreme Court to get the case, Amnesty International versus Clapper thrown out. And that was, again, challenging the issue of NSA collecting all this data without a warrant. And the Solicitor General lied to the court, saying that anybody where this data was used against them, either in a court or wherever, they would be told. And that was simply a lie. And so now they're trying to scramble to figure out what to do about that. All the past thousands of cases that they've done this way, I think they're going to write those off and say, well, that's just collateral damage. You know, well, that shouldn't be. I mean, it's a violation of the Constitution, the foundation of this country. If
sure.
our government wants to do that, they want to violate our Constitution or change it, there's a process to do that, and they should follow that process. Create an amendment, get it passed Congress, send it around to the states to ratify. I mean, that's the procedure we're supposed to do. But our government is taking a totally different, very, very ugly path.
A totalitarian revolution is really what it is. William Edward Benny is our guest. I'm going to come back and ask him about that famous statement of Clapper, the director of intelligence, to Congress, saying, we don't spy on Americans, we don't collect any data. That's like saying the sun didn't come up. I mean, it's just, they're bad guys. I mean, that's what they are. They're villains. It's not being done to protect us. ExposeFacts.org. William Benny, straight ahead. Your calls.
Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic. It's Alex Jones.
I've been on air 20 years. It'll be 20 years in about a month. And by 1996, as a libertarian promoting liberty, I was had police chiefs contacting me in major cities, emergency managers, engineers, who were aware of all this stuff going into place behind the scenes. And I would go on air and talk about it, so I would get sent more data. Then I got syndicated. That's the reason I realized how much trouble we were in before a lot of other folks, was because a lot of people out there in the system who knew more than I did were basically using me as a conduit to get stuff out of the public. So I can't take credit for being light years ahead of everybody else. But now we don't have an excuse. This stuff is out in the open thanks to heroes like William Edward Benny, who could make a lot of money working for the private contractors and the big companies that are making tens of billions of dollars a year milking this. 800,000 people, the Washington Post reported last year, 840-something thousand, have access to all this spy data. And I'm no engineer, but I am a geopolitical researcher. It just sounds like insider trading, people harassing friends and family. It sounds like a way to corner markets. It sounds like a way for real terrorists or criminals to know if the good guys are after them. It just sounds like a devil's workshop on steroids with a helping of PCP to have 800,000 contractors in this. And now we know the NSA has used this stuff in other agencies. Because remember, this is given to dozens of other agencies, federal and state, to then just go out and look, harass their wives, their husbands, their neighbors, their competition, to plant stuff under sneak and peek and the Patriot Act on computers. I mean, it's just a Pandora's box of making us insecure and destroying our free market. Again, I'm not some 200 IQ super brain like William Benny, who headed up their major technical department and director of technical intelligence. I mean, that's the actual, to use a Starship Trooper analogy, brain bug. Okay, but just at my gut level gestalt, sir, did I hit on anything that is important, what I just said?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point is that this is drifting toward a government, a central government that's like J. Edgar Hoover on super steroids. They have the knowledge and background of virtually everybody in the country, and that gives them a basis for blackmail and influence peddling. So that's the way they can get things done, you know, leverage against individuals and make sure that, like, for example, when Nancy Pelosi said impeaching George Bush is off the table, the leverage he had was she was a part of these programs, so she'd have to impeach herself.
So they get everybody to be part of it, including local police, and now they're all part of the cult.
Exactly, and now they all have to defend themselves. Otherwise, they all fall.
That's how Julius Caesar took over Rome. I mean, this has been a... Sir, is this not an orchestrated, diabolical plan, then?
It sure seems that way. At least it's being done, and the administrations as they come in keep perpetuating it. Well, I mean, from Russ Tice, who was a former also an NSA whistleblower, he has been saying that for a long time that they've been transcribing phone calls and conversations and emails of U.S. representatives and senators and judges in the federal courts as well as the Supreme Court.
Well, and that's now come out. The CIA is spying on the Senate.
Yep, and this is just CIA. NSA is much more powerful at that. So that just means that they're assembling all that blackmail information for leverage.
Gosh, and correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't having 800,000 contractors, just contractors, hooked into this? That, I mean, if I wanted to bring down a government or a country, I would let 800,000 people have access to this panopticon type system, because it would then leak everywhere and then the country would be insecure. I mean, this sounds like the opposite of what I would want to do if I wanted to have a secure, safe country.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. I mean, I objected to this in the late 90s when they first started doing this outsourcing to contractors. I was objecting to it then because I didn't think it was a smart idea to do that, just under the principle of exporting, you know, giving away your trade secrets as a business to companies. And that's fundamentally what it is. It's you're giving away the trade secrets, how you acquire data, how you look at data, that kind of thing. And that's exposed to all these contractors.
And imagine how easy it is for foreign states and foreign corporations to then penetrate and compromise the contractors.
Yeah, that's right. That's happened any number of times down through history. I mean, that is a kind of a weakness that, I mean, they could even hire the contractors too. You know, later on, after their contracts were done with NSA, they could hire them as contractors over their way too. Although, you know, they do have a non-disclosure agreement that says they won't disclose anything they've discussed. I mean, they take with them the knowledge of what they experienced while they were there, and they can apply that knowledge and techniques to other things without actually compromising what they were doing at NSA.
Incredible.
Effectively, it means the same thing. I mean, you're still giving that expertise away.
it's amazing to get your insight here on air. William Benny is our guest. I want to go to some phone calls, 800-259-9231, specifically questions for the highest level NSA whistleblower of all time. He was in the top four position there. Some say even the number three position, the director, the technical leader for intelligence with the NSA. I have a whole bunch of Twitter questions from Real Alex Jones here for you, sir. But first off, anything else you'd like to add before we go to these calls?
I just think we as a country and we as a people need to decide whether or not we're going to continue to tolerate this. I don't think we should. I mean, this is not consistent with our founding principles. We need to make this a major issue in the upcoming election in November. And when the politicians come around to solicit your votes and talk to you and all, you should raise these issues with them and say, look, if you don't start facing up and starting to live and protect and defend the Constitution, we are going to fire you. And we need to pass that message to them very strongly. Otherwise, they're going to sit there and drift along and do whatever they want to do. You have to threaten them with their jobs. That's the only thing that will make them do anything. That's what I think we need to do. I mean, I don't see any other way out of this.
Sure. I totally agree with your statement there. R.C. Patterson asked on Twitter, he says, Mr. Benny, any advice on how to mess or scramble the profile data with NSA is doing on us, i.e. web credit purchase, etc.? I would just say everyone always thinks about how to get around it. How about we politically change it and stop the whole thing that's wrong? But until we get there, what would you do to protect your private information?
Actually, I do absolutely nothing. And the reason is because there's virtually, I'm a target, and so there's virtually nothing I could do anyway. So anything they wanted to get from me, they could actively attack my computer to get it or doing another sneak and peek kind of invasions of my house like the FBI normally does. They do sneak and peeks to implant things in the house to listen to you and all that kind of stuff. So I know I'm a target, so therefore I don't really try to do anything at all. In fact, I don't want to because I want them to know everything I'm saying about them.
So, I'm the same way. I have the exact same policy.
Yeah. Well, I really don't know what anybody could individually do. I mean, I wouldn't... As long as you don't become visible to them for some reason or other, they won't target you. I don't think they'll look at your profile. But if you do something that they irritate them, why they'll call up your profile and start looking at you. So I'm not sure really. I mean, you could try to use Tor. Tor is an annoyance to them. That's it helps anonymize what you're doing on the web. That is some impediment. It causes them some difficulty. If they target you, of course, they can go around that. So
one way to do it is jamming it with disinformation, garbage, just creating totally random profiles, just doing weird things. That'll create kind of plaques of clouds that will, I think, alter the profile. But I'd say let it. It gets criminal. It's illegal. And have the profile full of stuff exposing them so they're aware with their sample rate just how many people are awake to them.
Yeah, that's what I try to do. I make sure anything I say, if I refer to them, I refer to them in a way that makes it perfectly clear what I think of them.
Well, it's organized crime in a revolution against our civilization. I mean, do you agree with that statement? They have organized in a racketeering operation to openly violate everyone's rights en masse, lie about it, get caught, and keep lying.
Well, that certainly is an analogy that would work. I mean, I don't think they've taken the final step. Like, they haven't gotten what the Stasi does, like incarcerate you. But they discredit you and kind of try to embarrass you and get you out of the way. They just don't put you in the gulag or something, you know. That step has not been taken yet.
Well, I mean, they're starting to try.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it can't be.
Absolutely. Look at Dinesh D'Souza and his film. Yeah. Let's go to a phone call. Again, William Benny, who is a real hero, is our guest. Catherine has a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I do. I have a question for Mr. Benny. I'm from Canada, which is not from USA, but, like, politically speaking, I'm scared that Russia's going to, like, trench over the border. There's no oceans. There's no nothing to stop them. whether we, like, should we be worried in Canada about Russia, like, marching over the Arctic?
Mr. Benny, you have had some things to say recently about the Russia situation. Russia is saying that they may take part of the Arctic that borders them. I don't see Russia in an offensive mode right now, but maybe you can correct me.
No, I don't. But this is also one of my very... I'm actually an NSA advocate, okay? but I'm an advocate in the form of doing the right thing. Now, what's happened is when they went to this bulk acquisition of data that's diverted the effort and intensity and investigation into areas that aren't relevant to anything that's important, and that takes away from other areas, like being able to watch the militaries of the Russians or any other country. And it reduces the capacity to do intelligence and to acquire and smartly assemble intelligence about those targets. So that's hurting our ability to understand what they're doing or what they're intending to do.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier, just as a layperson. When you're spying on 320 million Americans, how on earth could you be watching the Russians?
That's the point. But actually, it's even worse than that, though. It's probably on the order of somewhere between 3 and 4.5 billion people around the world.
Sure.
300 plus million U.S. citizens, but the rest of the people in the world, too. That's really the thing that's destroying the capacity. I mean, you need to have a rich environment of information that's relevant to assess something that's ongoing or that's impending. And if you don't have that, it becomes very difficult to succeed.
Which is what the globalists want. This is a sabotage plan against this country, in my view. Let's talk to David from Florida. Go ahead. You're on the air. Question for William Benny.
Hey, Mr. Benny, Mr. Jones. I really appreciate you immensely for your contributions to our society. I just wanted to mention that we've got Russia on the West, you know, really intensifying in Arkhangelsk, where they put together a large part of their revenue to develop the largest world's oil platform to go into the Bering Sea and the Antarctic. And let's face it, the Antarctic has the largest troves of oil and gas, you know, on the planet. And we've got to back up a little bit because we know that Hitler and the whole World War II was put together in a deal because it was all CIA-based, and we put all...
I understand, but specifically, what is your question for the guest?
My question is this. We put together all of those Nazis into a place called Little America 4 in Antarctic. And I just want to know what you think the outcome is going to be, because the end game, I think, is actually that the Russians, when the end game comes, they're going for Antarctic.
They've said they're getting ready to go for it. I got to go because we have limited time. These are specific questions for Mr. Benny. You did join the intelligence professionals earlier last week, I know, I'm looking for the article, and basically came out and said that ex-NSA director, U.S. intelligence veterans, write open letter to Merkel to avoid all-out Ukraine war. What is your take on Ukraine and Russia, sir?
It looks like the Russians are playing a saber-rattling game. It's not really an invasion. I mean, if you had an invasion like I was involved in and analyzing all the invasion of Czechoslovakia and in Afghanistan, if you're preparing to have an invasion or you're going to have something, then you've got to be there with a lot, in the case of Ukraine anyway, with a lot more in terms of capabilities, in terms of personnel and equipment. I mean, you can't just do it with the few tens of thousands they have. So the point is, it's not really an invasion. What they're doing is playing games along the border and saber rattling. Now, the point is, I tend to agree with the president here that this needs to be solved diplomatically. And I believe that that's the correct route, rather than try to go to confrontation. I mean, I don't think the Russians feel very threatened by the expansion of NATO.
No kidding.
And I would say, well, okay, fine. If you look at it from their perspective, they have some concerns. Well, okay, why don't we invite them into NATO? Why don't we get all of us together in a mutual defense treaty?
Instead of always fighting with each other.
Instead of fighting with each other and looking and acting like they are really a threat, why don't we include them instead of excluding them?
Here's another question from Mike Headsroom on Twitter. He wants to ask you, Mr. Benny, has the NSA managed to break SSL? What is your preferred encryption algorithm?
I don't believe any... any commercially available encryption system is necessarily safe.
Of course, yeah.
Simply because of the back doors and the weakening that the NSA has done through a Bull Run program that's been part of the Snowden exposure. They had the Bull Run program to weaken all the encryption systems. That simply meant to give them weaknesses in the keys or in the way keys are generated.
Well, don't they just pressure the developers to give them back doors?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And that's how they get it. And my point is that you can take some very simple, you could use whatever is commercially available as a kind of a community cipher that you could use. But underneath that, you have to come up with some variation of your own. So that when they go through assuming that they have the right keys and everything, when they're breaking all these things, they end up with a mess.
Wow.
So that it's basically layers of complexity is what I'm. And one of those layers can be a very simple thing, like you simply take the binary stream of a text that you're trying to encrypt and just transpose the bits in a pattern. And that destroys the integrity of the text. So that even if they have the correct key coming through the different layers of encryption for you, they still end up with that transposed mess, and they can't recognize it. So that's one way of that I had proposed of defeating bulk or the brute force attack on a system, just assuming a whole trillions of keys and going through keys and trying them to see if you get any partial text. Well, in that case, if you do that bit transposition, that destroys the integrity so that any partial text you would get under any key assumption under that brute force attack would be absolutely wrong.
Amazing. Stay there. This is incredible. We have more questions straight ahead. How secure is Black Phone and more? All right, final segment in the full broadcast. Mr. Benny's agreed to do 5 more minutes with us into overdrive to finish these phone calls. Tyler, Lance, Melissa, C, Lee, and others that are holding. I got a bunch of questions that have come in at Real Alex Jones on Twitter, but look at this CNET news headline. Robot couch can drive you to the fridge and back, as if this country isn't already obese enough. Next, they're going to have toilets in the couch, like Idiocracy. People need to really wake up and stop just going along to get along. And just because the majority of folks want to be decadent slobs doesn't mean the rest of us have to be slaves to this. William Benny, top NSA whistleblower, is our guest. Truth, Justice, Liberty on Twitter, handle Occupy Earth Now, says, do you know anything about Israel having direct access to NSA data? I know some of the phone company caller ID systems do go back to Israel, and then that goes back to the infiltration via contractors by other governments. William Benny?
There are, of course, the international relationships, and, of course, that's been published again by the Snowden material that they have relationships with Israel. But in general, any exchange of information between any of those parties is done separately. No one has free access to one another's database, but those things are held kind of privately. If they want to share something, they put it off on a separate data set so that they can access that. So it's not, they don't have direct access.
Sure. We just saw the hack of the Apple Cloud. I wonder if there's been hacks of the CIA or NSA that we don't know about.
Well, supposedly they have a closed network. You know, that's what NSA claims they have. And I think for the most part they do, but, you know, it's really, I mean, how many things are certain in this life? You know, that's the problem. They have very bad documentation of their network. In other words, one of the main things you have to do to ensure cybersecurity is you've got to have good documentation of your network, and that will tell you how people could access any of your components inside your system. And then you need to define what you want to protect, and then you surround and build within your system a protection system, you know, covering that. But those are two things that most NSA agencies in the U.S. government do not have. They don't have a good set of documentation on their network.
Sure. Plus, a lot of the chips.
They don't know.
Sorry. Go ahead.
But I mean, they have designed it that they wanted it closed. Now, whether it effectively is another question. Okay.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Wow.
I can't really say for sure what is and what isn't there.
Tyler in California, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey there, gentlemen. I had a question for Mr. Benny, and obviously I have probably a million questions I could talk
about. It's fine. Go ahead and throw your question out.
Most important thing, but the anniversary coming up of 9/11, I think that we need to look into what's going on with the continuity of government. And I'd like to know Mr. Benny's opinion.
Sure. What about coup d'etat by COG, kind of a reverse Valkyrie? We know that FEMA and others have basically set up their own governing system in the name of COG, but then that can be used to have a coup against the people.
Well, I, of course, would certainly not hope that that would never happen. I mean, you have to do, of course, you have to have ways and means of protecting yourself, that's for sure. I mean, and I believe that the Congress has a police force that guards them, which in case of CIA, if they really wanted to do something that I don't think would be an effective deterrent. But most of the people I know in CIA or any of these other organizations, at least the people at the working level, would never tolerate any kind of move like that. I mean, these people are really, most of them are very dedicated, honest, patriotic people. They would never do that.
Exactly.
Like that.
They're compartmentalized, though.
Yeah. It's the management of these agencies that are the real problem.
Absolutely. How do we deal with that? We're going to come back and